Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Best Damn Sports Show on Stereo, the Young Black and Bothered Sports Desk. I'm your boy, Hugh, and goddamn, we've been gone for a long time. And a lot has happened in that time. Woo! Excuse me, out of roughness. I was just climbing the hill that leads to my apartment. I'll be out of breath for like a few seconds. But anyway, we are here. Lewis here, Greg is here. Greg is playing the part of me tonight, broadcasting from the special happy place that we like. And Cashley is here. How y'all been? It's been a while.
Yeah, what's been going on?
Apparently Q's tired from walking the hill, so... not much going on here. Just same old, same old. It has been a while since we've all been here. Just ready to get back into it, I guess.
All right,
can you hear me?
Yep, we hear you loud and clear.
Oh, okay. My mic is muted for some reason on the app.
Stereo.
Okay.
And Greg, what about you? If you're in the quiet space now.
I'm feeling good. Bobby Brown's in the background, and I'm going to be quiet for the most of this, but I'm telling you, when I bring the heat, I'm going to. It's been a while. It's been a month and a half. So I hope y'all ready, and I'll be quiet.
All right. Well, it hasn't been a month and a half. It's been a month. But, yep, we are here, ready to get it on, get it popping. And we'll start things off first, leading off with our wrestling update. And I know there's been a lot going on. We had a pay-per-view this weekend, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
So tell us all about it.
Yes. Well, big wrestling weekend. I won't say it had a WrestleMania feel quite yet, but it was on its way there. So that's a pretty big deal. So yeah, shout out to AEW and New Japan Pro Wrestling, of course, for their second annual joint effort called Forbidden Door. And I can honestly say that they won up themselves from last year. I think last year they were feeling out how to actually put on a joint show. So, you know, there was a lot of high spots, and then there was some, no, that didn't work out too well. But I think they really found their stride this year. This year's Forbidden Door was held in Toronto at Scotiabank Arena. Very, very enthusiastic crowd. I don't think I saw one empty seat in that arena. It's totally sold out, packed show. Very energy packed card. So I'll go ahead and get started from the top. Of course, there was about a half hour long pre-show. And some of those matches included the Mogul Embassy versus El Desperado and Chaos. Another was the Owen Hart Foundation tournament quarterfinal match with Athena defeating Billy Starks. Also, we had the United Empire facing Los Ingobernables de Japón with LIJ picking up that win. And then to start off the main card, we started off with the AEW World Championship match with current champion MJF facing the Ace of the Universe, Hiroshi Tanahashi. I think this match really stood out for storytelling purposes. MJF really did a good job of really working with Tanahashi. As we all know, even though he's the ace of New Japan, you can kind of tell that his body's starting to slow down on him a bit. But because of his no-quit attitude, he's definitely going to try to keep going as long as possible. But MJF did pull away with that win. And then follow up with the Owen Hart Foundation Men's Tournament quarterfinal match. CM Punk faced New Japan Pro Wrestling OG Satoshi Kojima. And shout out to Kojima, who at 52 years old still moves quite well in the ring. So really shout out to him, and shout out to him and Punk really putting on a really good match. And the Toronto crowd made their feelings with CM Punk well than known. So they don't like him at all. So that was one of the best parts of the match, was definitely the crowd. Next up was the AEW International Championship match, with current champion Orange Cassidy facing New Japan World TV champion Zack Sabre Jr. versus a Ring of Honor Pure champion Shibata versus Daniel Garcia, with Orange Cassidy pulling out that win. And this is a really good match because you had at least two very technical wrestlers with Shibata and Zack Sabre Jr. in this match, but yet it was still all gelled together and it was still very much entertaining. So shout out to them, and shout out to Orange Cassidy for retaining. Next up, we had the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship match on the line, with current champion Sonata Ladoki in his corner facing Jungle Boy Jack Perry with Hook in his corner. I think initially when folks heard about this matchup, it was like, Sonata versus Jungle Boy. However, they were able to build up a nice little story by, you know, trading little jabs online and things like that. So I think they built the story up themselves, and that's what made this match interesting after all. Sonata, of course, was able to retain the title. And of course, Jack Perry did turn heel and turned on Hook at the very end. So that's going to be a story developing. Next up, we had a 5-on-5 grudge match with the Blackpool Combat Club versus the Elite. So that's Hangman and Page and Matt and Nick Jackson, Eddie Kingston, and Tomohiro Ishii. This was a very hard-hitting match. So it was nothing cute, nothing real technical, just very hard-hitting. So, and oddly enough, Jon Moxley did not bleed in this match. I absolutely cannot believe he kept all his body fluids in his body this time. I'm shocked. Okay. But the Blackpool Combat Club was able to pull out that win. So shout out to them. Next up, we have the AEW Women's World Championship match with current champion Toni Storm facing New Japan Strong Women's Champion Willow Nightingale. I don't think enough people take Willow Nightingale seriously enough. She's very strong. And she's very good in the ring, outside of a very positive attitude, which obviously draws you in. I just don't think people take her seriously enough. But hopefully people did after this match. But Toni Storm was able to pull out the win, even though it was a dirty win, but she was able to pull out the win nonetheless. Next up, which arguably will be match of the night and probably contender for match of the year, we have the IWGP United States Heavyweight Championship match with champion Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay. I don't even know where to begin with this match. That's how good it was. And as you know, these two have a history. When Kenny Omega initially left New Japan, the torch, I guess you could say, was passed on to Will Ospreay. And they met at this year's Wrestle Kingdom. Will Ospreay was the current champion, and of course, he lost to Kenny Omega. And that match was awesome. So if you haven't seen it, go back and watch that one. And this one, I think, was the final chapter in their story, and that's definitely the way it was kind of told. But Will Ospreay was able to defeat Kenny Omega and win his title back. Yeah, match of the night. And like I said, match of the year candidate. So This was an awesome match. Moving on to the trios match, we have Darby Allin, Sting, and LIJ's Tetsuya Naito, who the crowd just absolutely popped for. Like, this was just an awesome addition to this match, versus Chris Jericho, Minoru Suzuki, and Sammy Guevara. I can honestly say I actually enjoyed this match. I think when you get six-man tag, it can kind of go either way, but I actually enjoyed this match. So Darby Allin, Sting, and Tetsuya Naito were able to pull out this win, and I think the crowd really enjoyed this one as well. Now on to the main event. Brian Danielson faced Kazuchika Okada. You know, I think if someone said that this was match of the night to them, I wouldn't be mad at that. I think this was one of those dream matches that everybody wanted. So it's like, okay, let's put this one together. It's not that it wasn't going to be good, but it definitely had dream match written all over it, and it definitely delivered. Brian Danielson did get hurt midway and was able to make Okada tap out with a fractured arm. So shout out to Brian Danielson. Apparently he will be out from 6 to 8 weeks for recovery. So yeah, definitely wish him a speedy recovery, and shout out to him and Okada. They really told a really good story with this one and matched which for wits. And, you know, Brian Danielson was a better competitor. So yeah, that was AEW Forbidden Door in a nutshell. I'm gonna go out and say I give this event an A. I was very happy with it. I think the matches had a very nice flow. I don't think there was a point in this match where I said, okay, I'm gonna have a bathroom break. It wasn't that kind of event at all. And I think WWE should really, really take notice at this point, because they have to step their game up. AEW is consistently putting on good events right now. And I think their relationship with New Japan and, of course, Ring of Honor is really paying off. So, yeah, if you want to expand your horizons as a wrestling fan, now's the time to do it. And that's my Forbidden Door wrap-up.
All right. Lou, Greg, anything you want to add?
I did not get a
chance. Give me one second.
Okay, I was going to say, I know Greg watched it. So I will let him give his rebuttal or his take on it also. But from the group chat, I could tell that it was... it sounded like a really, really, really good pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Shout out to y'all for being amazing. I'm not going to keep you too long. I'm not going to do the 20-minute rant. I will just say the WWE really needs to fix themselves if this is what they have to compete with. Not only do they have to compete with AEW and New Japan, they have to compete with the fact that the fans now know what good wrestling is. And the last time I can comfortably say I saw good wrestling from WWE was over 5 years ago. 2016, to be exact. That was the last time I actually went back. And I was like, when's the last time I saw a pay-per-view that was as good? It was 2016. 2017, up until now, has been a lot of the same shit. And Forbidden Door... like, Cashley has been telling us, she's like, hey, like, y'all need to tune in, you need this and this and this. Initially, we thought that both pay-per-views are going to be the same weekend. This is how you know the WWE is scared. They moved, I don't want to say they moved, but they essentially knew Forbidden Door was the same weekend as them. And they put it on a weekend that, honestly, nobody's going to be watching their pay-per-view. And I can comfortably say, no one's watching that. It's going to be shit that that people have on in the background because there's nothing else going on. People are like, okay, great. It's the 4th of July weekend. It's what? At that point, it's what? July 2nd? So people are going to be watching it because there's nothing else to watch on a Saturday night. And UFC, they know better because they're like, okay, it's the 4th of July weekend. Nobody wants to watch an event on the Saturday of the 4th of July. Except for WWE fans. They're like, okay, we need something to watch because we want to compare it to AEW. I can guarantee you, just like Cashley said, like this, and I know you were like kind of like tiptoeing around the fact that like this is their WrestleMania. It was better than WrestleMania. With less. I can comfortably say Forbidden Door, like if they had the same marketing, if they had the same venue, if they had the same styling as WrestleMania, is like, okay, great. Like, we're going to make this like a 2-day event. We're going to go and bring out, you know, all the stops, WrestleCon and all these other like vendors and stuff like that. And I'm almost guaranteeing they had certain events, they just didn't have it as big as WrestleMania, right? Forbidden Door in the next 5 years is going to surpass Starrcade. Now, for any wrestling fan that's an actual wrestling fan, like, Starrcade was like, even when WrestleMania was like, okay, like, it's still WrestleMania, but it wasn't as good as Starrcade. People used to say Starrcade was better than WrestleMania, and I can comfortably say that that was the case for at least 5 or 6 years. So, okay, great. Like, Stone Cold, he's in the pay-per-view and everything like that. Rock's in the pay-per-view, but Starrcade was always like, no, like, you're going to get a show.
Well, Starrcade, the one where they had two rings.
No, no, what's that?
Starrcade? That was War Games.
Side by side.
That was War Games.
War Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but when I think about how AEW planned this and structured this, like, they put on a... I thought the timing was about, like, 27 minutes. It honestly felt like it was an hour match. It felt like an Iron Man, the way that I think of an Iron Man match. I don't care about the minutes. I don't care about how long it is, as long as it's entertaining. WWE will put on an hour-long, like, Iron Man match, and 30 minutes of it is outside interference. Like, okay, this person is interfering with the match, and they're making up 15, 20 minutes of the match. They had that for this, like, card, but it didn't take away from the match. They had the outside interference, and the outside interference is like, no, the match is good enough that, honestly, I'm just here to just add value to this match. So, right now, the way I see, like, this entire card from top to bottom, if I had to rank it, it's going to be like an 8.5 for me out of 10. I know that sounds crazy. It's like, wait, Greg? Like, the most critical person of, like, this show when it comes to, like, wrestling pay-per-views? 8.5. And the reason why I say this, because I've seen 6 months of pay-per-views and events and main events and house shows and just, like, Raws and SmackDowns and, like, collisions and shit like that. Like, this, the build-up was so good that I was actually kind of upset that the card ended the way it ended. I was like, yo, like, and it lasted until almost midnight. I was at an airport watching this shit. Like, I was waiting to pick up my sister and my brother-in-law watching this, like, card. And I never do that. Like, usually with AEW or any other, even WWE, I'm like, all right, like, if I can't watch the match, I won't watch it. I pulled over to, like, an empty lot and watched the Kenny Omega fight. Like, I sat there and watched it. And I felt like I was watching it for about 60 minutes. And I know the runtime was only about like 20. I think it was between 28 and like 33 minutes or something. It felt like it was fantastic. It was absolutely fantastic. My new girl, Willow Nightingale, like, she is, oh my God, I can't believe I'm about to say this out loud. She is what the WWE wanted from Nia Jax.
Like, I can agree with that.
She not only is, like, a headliner, but she's a mid-card. Like, regardless of who you put her with, she's going to present a show. And Toni Storm is already, like, premier to me. But when I watched that match, I was like, oh, like, she's competing. Like, Nia Jax, whenever I used to watch her, I'm like, okay, no, she's in this match because they couldn't figure out who else to put here that was, like, either a woman of color or somebody who was, like, bigger than their opponent, right? And when I look at Willow, I'm like, oh, like, she has the physique. She has the talent. And the way that she maneuvered in the ring, I was like, oh, I haven't seen a woman's match that was that good in years. When I say years, even with AEW and TNA, like, I have not seen a match that, honestly, I've watched from, like, the moment, like, it started until the moment I had to leave the house in order to go to the airport. And even though I was mad that the outcome was what it was, Cashley will tell you, I said this the week leading into the event. I didn't really know who, like, Willow was. But once I watched a couple of her YouTube clips, because I was like, wait, like, they pushed her up this much? Like, she's just, like, they're doing with her what the WWE and NXT is thinking that they're doing with my favorite thick woman from NXT who just keeps having her ACL torn. I even forgot her fucking name. That's how bad she's been in the past 2 years. Like, I can't even remember her name. Like, I just remember her, like, physically. I'm like, okay, she's a thick white woman that Drake follows on Twitter, right? Or Instagram. But Willow, she, like, the fact that I'm calling her first name, like, I've been watching her this entire time. Nothing about that match with them harmed Willow. Like, even her not becoming, like, you know, victorious in that match, it didn't bury her. With WWE, if you lose a match, it's like you've been set back 3 months. Like, you know for a fact you're either mid-card or you're not on the card at all. Or if you are on the card, you're on some tag team match. Willow can literally do the next AEW pay-per-view in a month or two, and she can go for a title fight. She can go to New Japan, the same fucking thing. And it's like, y'all, like, it just felt good to just watch a pay-per-view for the first time in months. I would honestly say years. And I didn't really have a criticism. It just, I felt like a wrestling fan again. I felt like I was actually enjoying it. And the last time I had that was comfortably, I can say, the 2021 WrestleMania. Was it 2021? I want to say it was 2021 when Stone Cold was in it. It wasn't 2022, right?
I think that was 2022.
It was 2022, okay. So even if it was 2022, that was the last time I could comfortably say, oh, I just watched a wrestling pay-per-view for it to be a wrestling pay-per-view. And before then, 2016. I can comfortably say that because we were at the 2016 WrestleMania, right? But ultimately, like, I just want to say, and this is my last statement, I don't want to compare AEW and WWE anymore. I just honestly want people to just recognize, like, a good story versus headline wrestling, if we could just call it that. Like, headline wrestling is WWE. You're going and you're looking at names. You're looking at who your favorite people are, the people that you could follow. You could just literally turn on the chest versus just like story. And like you and Pam used to say, like, if you really want a story, Lucha AEW. And it just felt really good. It was really refreshing to honestly just watch an event that started on time. Pre-show, they said, hey, you know what? Pre-show is from 6 to 7. 7 o'clock, the motherfucking main of, like, the show was on. I was like, oh, they're not fucking around. They have this structure. And I have not been that entertained in wrestling in a really long time. So if you guys want to watch replays, if you want to just go and just, like, witness good wrestling again, this would be my start. And I'm just letting people know, again, last little statement. Excuse the truck that's going by, but I've not been in a position where I can honestly say the next time AEW comes to DC, Q and I can comfortably go there. I don't want to go to SmackDown. I don't want to go to Raw. I want to go to AEW just for the story, just for the story alone. And with the fact that, what's his name? MJ, I will call this dude MJF, but MJF, I know it's not that. MJF, pretty much open the car with them. I was like, wait, if they're opening the car with him, like, I thought, like, that's what the story was. They had enough story for 3.5 hours. They had enough story. It was like there was enough build. There was enough story. People actually cared about the, you know, the hero and the so it's like, regardless of what it was still a good story overall. So, I'm sorry. Of course, there's an asshole out here who just has their alarm on. But in closing, again, AEW, you're doing everything that I thought you would do, just better. I was always of the mindset of like the WWE just being it. Of course, this is fucking pussy. But either way, AEW, continue to do right, because right now, when it comes to Money in the Bank, there's nothing they can do that's better than what I just saw on Sunday night. There's absolutely nothing.
That's true. Anybody can, that's true.
Like, AEW set a bar so high that I'm looking past Money in the Bank and I'm looking at TLC. I'm looking at pay-per-views because, honestly, I don't want to see Roman. I don't want to see anything else. I want to see them beat Forbidden Door. And the fact that it comes on after WrestleMania, the WWE really has, like, are you fucking kidding me? So, they really have to figure out what they're going to do in the future, because if WrestleMania is happening between March and April, you have Forbidden Door in the summer when more people have the opportunity to travel. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. So WWE, Vince, Triple H, Steph, everybody else. Yeah. In about 2 to 3 years, people are going to be like, okay, do I want to go to WrestleMania to see the same place I've been to in the past 3 or 4 years? Or do I want to go to Forbidden Door? And
look, I've already decided I'm going to Forbidden Door next year. So I've already decided that.
So just to confirm, and I'll shut up. Phillies seemed good until I realized they were cutting back on everybody at WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're cutting back on, like, storylines, they're cutting back on money, they're cutting back on budgets and all this other stuff. And now I'm looking at Forbidden Door, I'm like, okay, yeah, I think Forbidden Door might be better to go to than WrestleMania
next year. And listen, Tony Khan spent a lot of money on this event. Bryan Danielson came out to, what song was that? Well, anyway, Tony Khan in his media scrum said the amount of money he spent for that was the same amount of a wrestling contract. So Tony Khan really put his money behind this event.
Oh, yeah. So say less. Honestly, WWE, I'm going to give them a deadline of Thanksgiving. If they don't impress me more than AEW did by Thanksgiving, we're going to Forbidden Door. And I love WWE. But again, for the 15th time, if they don't figure this shit out by Thanksgiving, Forbidden Door it is. I land.
All right. Excuse me. Well, Cashley, thank you for that great wrestling update. Just like I can attest in the group chat that it was a very, very good show. I didn't watch it, of course, but I had a reason this time because I was at a surprise birthday party for my cousin. But thank you for that update. And next, we're moving this train right along. There's not much NFL news this week at, well, and it's not going to be much until training camp start, but there is one nugget that I do want to talk about. And we're not going to talk about it long because y'all should all know what it is. The sale of the Washington Commanders is trudging on down to the finish line. Praise God. So, over the weekend, there was reporting that the NFL has penciled in July 24th, I believe, July 20th or the 24th, to debate and vote on the sale of the Commanders from that asshole Daniel Mark Snyder to the group headlined by Josh Harris, the current owner of the Philadelphia 76ers and the New Jersey Devils. Also in that deal is Mitchell Rails, a billionaire from D.C., from the D.C. area, and Irvin Magic Johnson. So, it is almost celebration time, Commanders fans. It's almost celebration time. Dan Snyder is almost gone. Almost gone. We got at least 3 to 4 more weeks of dealing with his bullshit, and then he is forever a part of the dustbin of history. So with that, also there was some other Dalvin Cook was released by the Vikings. People saw that coming because he's making too much money. There is talk that he could end up at the Jets or in Miami. So that's still to be played out. Also, DeAndre Hopkins is still on the market. The Patriots, I believe, was it the Patriots, Lou? The Patriots and some other team.
Did he visit it? He visited the Patriots and the Titans.
And the Titans. So we should have a decision on where DeAndre Hopkins will be playing this season should be coming within the next couple of weeks, if not days, because the report said that New England is really pushing to get him on board. That's nice.
Yeah, they need to get Mac Jones a clear number one receiver.
They do. They effed up his development last year by having Matt Patricia call plays. Like, he's an offensive genius, which he's not. So the Patriots have rectified that by bringing in our good friend Bill O'Brien. But yeah, the Patriots definitely need a true number one. And even though DeAndre Hopkins' skill is kind of on a decline because he's like, what, 32 years old now?
Not sure.
You can still, Mac Jones can still throw up the ball and he will go get it. Yeah. So yeah, shout out to the Patriots if they do get him. That'll be interesting. Let's see if that shakes up the AFC East just a little bit more. You know, that division has really undergone a transformation this offseason with Aaron Rodgers going to the Jets, Jalen Ramsey being traded to the Dolphins. So we'll see. We'll see. That's going to be an interesting division this year. And, of course, the greatness of Buffalo with Josh Allen, who I hope plays well enough all season that he ends up being MVP because he should have got it a couple years ago. But Aaron Rodgers. The AFC East is going to be interesting this year. AFC East is going to be very, very interesting this year, especially if the Patriots go and actually sign DeAndre Hopkins.
One thing I can't say, not to cut you off real quick, Hugh, but about the AFC East, they're like all over SportsCenter and, you know, all the morning ESPN shows and shit like that. It's like they're already crowning the Jets, like you know, how they would crown the Cowboys and everything. That's all they talk about is the Jets and the Cowboys. And if they both fail, It's going to be the greatest year of my life. Okay? I'm so sick of hearing about him already. And Aaron Rodgers hasn't even played a snap for him yet.
Exactly. And who knows where he has left? Who knows where I keep calling him Aaron Jones. Who knows where Aaron Rodgers has left in the tank? Because he's 30, about to turn 40. You know, so, I mean, we see, you know, Tom Brady did play until he was 45, but he looked at Brady last year. He was clearly done. And you look at what Rodgers did last year, that decline, Father Time is undefeated. So, with that being said, let's move on to the NBA. Jesus Christ, there has been some movement in the NBA over the past couple of weeks. Ever since Denver won the title, we've had some blockbuster trades. The NBA draft happened last week, and of course, Victor Wembanyama went number one to the Spurs. Brandon Miller number two to the Hornets, and Scoot Henderson, number three to Portland. There was also some trades in the draft. There were some trades made during the draft. A prospect that we thought was going to go higher dropped, including Cam Whitmore from Villanova. He was projected to be a lottery pick. He ended up dropping down to 20th to the Houston Rockets. So we'll get to all of that in a second. But let's talk about these trades. The Wizards kicked it off in grand style. If you call it grand style. right before the draft, a couple of days before the draft, they agreed to trade Bradley Beal. His $252 million, full no trade clause. And traded him to the Phoenix Suns. Now, at first I thought, okay, he was traded to the Suns for a bag of rotten boiled peanuts and an old jock strap. But looking back at it, I think you got the greatest little better for the Wizards now. We knew there was a salary dump. We knew that the Wizards had no leverage because Bradley Beal had the right to veto any trade. He really wanted to go to Phoenix, and Phoenix ended up sending the Wizards a total of 9 picks. And they were all second rounders. you know, most of the picks that they did receive in hand were second round picks. But the Wizards also received 4 first round pick swaps in 2024, 26, 28, and in 2030. So that's that trade. Oh, they also sent Chris Paul, who was included in another transaction. We'll get to that in a second. Landry Shamet. And yeah. So you look at that return and you're thinking, oh my God, what did the Wizards do? But again, they were handcuffed because they gave Bill that big onerous contract with a full no trade clause. But at least now the Wizards have a direction. They're now deep into a rebuild. But the rebuild just got a little better. The rebuild got a little better because over the weekend, hours before the draft, the Wizards agreed to send Chris Paul and his contract to the Golden State Warriors for Jordan Poole and someone else. But Jordan Poole is going to be a Wizard this season. Before we get into the other Wizards trade, let's talk about those two trades. The bill for Chris Paul and Landry Shamet, and then the Chris Paul for Jordan Poole deal. What your thoughts on that, on those, Luke?
All right. Number one. I think y'all did really good getting all those draft picks. You could turn some of those second round picks maybe into a first round pick. You never know. Now, the only, all right, so the Wizards right now, do they have a pure superstar on their team? Not really, you know, not.
No.
Okay. Are you okay with them building, like, so they say they're going to build around Jordan Poole?
I'm just happy that the Wizards have finally embraced their rebuild, something that should have happened.
Okay.
And I said, okay, something that should have happened 4 years ago when John Wall blew out his Achilles. They should have traded Bill then. Because he was coming off back to back All Star seasons. That's when he was most valuable. They should have traded him then. They should have started the rebuild then. So that's 2019. They should have started the rebuild then. We will be coming out of it right now. I mean, just look at the timeline and look at what Oklahoma City did. They started their rebuild after they traded Paul George and Chris Paul. And they're
right
now emerging out of it.
Right.
They nearly made the playoffs last year.
I think we can legitimately say that OKC has a superstar in SGK. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I said SGK. Yeah. I don't know why I said SGK. But back to the Wizards. They also, Kyle Kuzma opted out, right? So he's a free agent.
Kuzma opted out. He's probably, he's a goner. And then we can talk about the next trade the Wizards made,
that's what I was getting to. Go ahead. I'll let you.
So the Wizards made 3 different, actually 4 trades last week, because they did a draft night trade, trading the number 8 pick for the number 7 to Indiana for Indiana 7th pick, and picking Bilal Coulibaly, who was Wimby's teammate on Metropolitan in 92, which I think is, some people was like, why? But I don't think it was a bad move at all. I mean, this is a rebuilding team. They're going to be bad. They're going to be bad. I'm okay with them being bad right now, because this was what the Wizards needed. They needed to rip the Band-Aid off. They needed to trade Bill. I mean, it's just 11 years, I give him his props. You know, he was a stalwart in the community. But he wasn't winning anything in D.C. He's not an alpha. He's not going to go out and win the games by himself. He needs co-stars. Like when John Wall was here before the injuries, John Wall was that alpha. John Wall can go out and get you and win you games. And Bill was the perfect sidekick. Bill was the perfect sidekick. He's Robin. He's not Batman. But the Wizards' third trade, that happened, this happened again before the draft, was the Wizards trading Kristaps Porzingis to the Boston Celtics. It was a three-team trade. The Celtics then traded Marcus Smart to the Grizzlies for two first-round picks. How did he get two first-round picks? For Marcus Smart, I don't know, but I'm not Boston.
And I'm not going to say this.
Good.
What did he say?
Again, forgive the like the music in the background. Let me just say this. Marcus Smart, he will be back on the Celtics in two seasons. And the reason why, once Memphis realizes they can't do anything with him to bundle him in a trade, he's going to go back to Boston as a free agent for cheap. He's going to end up being a starter.
Interesting. Okay.
And I mean, like, the reason that they traded for him, he's two-time defensive player of the year?
Well, one time. He only won it once.
One time. Once. Okay. But, I mean, he's a great defender. But, yeah, Memphis, I don't know why Boston did that. Everybody was shocked, including Marcus Smart. So, yeah, I have no idea why Boston did that trade.
Yeah, I don't, you know, all the talk was, who won the Sixth Man?
Last year?
Kimby. Yeah. Malcolm Brogdon. All the talk was about Malcolm Brogdon being traded, but his injury, whatever injury he had, scared a lot of teams, so that it basically made him untradeable. But yeah, I don't understand that trade. I don't understand sending Marcus Smart out. That when I saw that, I was like, what? So going back to the Wizards, like I said, they don't have a bona fide star right now. Jordan Poole's going to put up 30 to 40 shots a game. Hey, that's fine. That's what his game dictates. He's going to get his numbers. He's going to get his numbers. If Kubale, whatever, if he works out, great. Everyone basically is pegging him as like, they're looking at him as people did when the Bucks drafted Giannis. If he turns into a Giannis type player, awesome. But right now, I don't mind the Wizards being bad. They have to be bad. You know, hopefully they're bad enough this year. Hopefully they're bad enough this year that they could, you know, get the most odds for the number one pick next year. But then again, this year's draft was just so deep. This was the year to be bad. This was the year to be bad. I mean, next year's draft, draft pool is looking, it's not looking as deep as it is this year, but it ain't, it's nothing to sneeze on. It's nothing to sneeze on. But this year was the year to be bad. And that's the only, I wish the Wizards would have went in this direction, years ago. Like 3-4,
I feel like the draft is going to be this bad for the next 2 to 3 years. And the reason why I say that is they're preparing for Bronny. And I know that sounds crazy to think about, but they don't give a fuck who's going to the draft. Like, everybody right now, when you look at how people are stacked up lineup-wise, everybody but Portland in the NBA is stacked. They are fucking stacked. The Wizards are stacked with draft picks. Boston is stacked with just every fucking thing. Second round picks. When I look at other teams, I'm like, you know what? They're not going to win, but they're going to be pretty fucking good. Like, they've structured it. When I say structured, meaning cheated, because we all know how the NBA is. Everybody remembers the corner fold, the draft pick where the folder was like folded in the corner for Hakeem and shit like that. Like, we all remember these things. Even though the NBA denies that this happens, we all know it was true. Wemby, like, I hate that I'm about to say this out loud. Wemby is not what everybody thinks he's going to be. The same way that everybody thought that Duncan was going to be, like, you know, no problem. What's going on, man? Sorry. But Wemby, he's going to be good. He's not going to be Duncan. He's not going to be Robinson. And the reason why he won't be both is because they are good in the eras that they were in. Right now, there's too many good people in the NBA to be like, you know what? Wemby is going to be that. And the reason why I say this, and I'm going to just shut up after this, look at Zion. Zion is more worried about the women that he accidentally gets pregnant than the people that he plays with on the court. Like, remember when Zion was supposed to be Bron? And then when they realized Zion won't be Bron, they're like, okay, let's focus on Wemby. It's like, no, what the fuck happened to Zion? Like, people keep forgetting that just two seasons ago, Zion was supposed to be the guy. He was supposed to be what Wemby is. Mm-hmm. So, Wemby is literally an ankle injury, an ACL injury, or a injury away from people saying, you know what he is? He is essentially just a 7'7" center. No, he won't reach Anthony Davis status. And the reason why he can't reach Anthony Davis status is not just his height. It's because he has no personality outside of that. Everybody who's been a first-round draft pick in the past 5 years has had a personality. It's like, okay, either they've done something stupid or they just like, okay, they just already gave superstar mentality. Wemby just doesn't give that. Wemby gives like, okay, I want to play for a team. They did his shoot-around today, and he went 0-for-4. He went 1-for-4. And the one shot he made was a dunk. It's not hard to dunk when your wingspan is 8'6". Because, again, and I hate to be that person, they are trying to make a center be a point guard. They are presenting Wemby as if like he is a diverse player. No, he's going to get on San Antonio and he's going to be a power forward center. The issue with him being a power forward and center is the fact that there are fucking four other positions that they don't have on that team. They didn't draft on that team. Nobody is talking about that shit when it comes to the NBA draft. People are like, okay, like, San Antonio has Wemby. Who the fuck else do they have? Nobody. They have a bunch of people that are like, okay, maybe they'll be Tony Parker. Maybe they'll be Manu Ginobili. But you know what they're not? Compatible with Wemby. San Antonio drafted because they knew they had the first pick. After the first pick, they didn't give a fuck who they got. Because here's the thing, he's a project piece. They're expecting to tank again. Again, because some dickhead is flushing the toilet in the background. And again, I'm being cute tonight and I apologize. But what's going to happen is this. San Antonio is, again, for the second year, they're going to tank. They're going to get in the top five picks because Wemby is not playing more than 60 games this year. What's going to happen is he's going to have the Zion. He's going to be in a position where it's like, okay, great. Like, he plays maybe 20, 30 full games. After he plays the 20 to 30 full games, he's going to have that 2-a-week, you know, he's going to have the pop syndrome where it's like, okay, you know what? He was supposed to play, but he's not going to play the entire game, or he's going to be limited minutes and shit like that. Nobody wants to deal with that. And San Antonio, like, everybody cares about Dallas right now. But again, I'll close by saying this. When it comes to Wemby, just expect more people to be concerned about Zion Williamson and if he's going to get traded, which I fully think that they're going to trade him too. If he's not going to Dallas, he's definitely going to San Antonio. Because they need to put him with somebody who matters. So I can see them putting him with Luka, and I can see them putting him with Wemby, because New Orleans is not it. And I'm ready for the articles to be like, oh, two number one picks playing together, Wemby and fucking Zion, and neither one of them are going to make a full season together. But you know what? Everybody's saying David Robinson, Tim Duncan. You know what Greg is saying? Can't fucking wait till Christmas when the games don't matter for anybody else but me because we're on the sports desk and we're talking our shit. So, again, I land.
I just want to say something real quick, Q. When I said comparing him to Anthony Davis, I meant the Anthony Day to Davis, not Anthony Davis, the basketball player. I meant Anthony Davis, the one who's always injured. And I could see that with Wemby, like hurting his foot, being out for 3 weeks, just the little injuries that stack up, and that's probably going to, you know, and I mean, listen, he's got a great coach there too, but you know, a coach can't do nothing about injuries. That's all.
Okay. All right. That was some good good points taken there. I was talking to someone, one of my friends at sports bar that I frequent a lot, and one thing I said, Wemby's going to have to put on at least 20 to 30 pounds. If they're going to play him at the five, and I know the NBA is moving towards being positionless, but he's not going to survive a season where he is right now. He has got to put on at least 20 to 30 pounds. And I think now that he's in the league, and I think that will happen. I mean,
Q, I'm gonna say this: it's not about the weight and everything that he needs to put on. Wemby needs to play against people who he's going to be playing with in the fucking pros. It's the equivalent of when you have practicing against JV. I know that sounds fucked up to say, but it's the absolute truth. When I think about, okay, who the fuck was he playing against? Playing against 5-6 fucking power forwards. It's like, bro, like, what? Like, who the fuck is he playing against? All those highlights, he's a foot and a half taller than everybody he's playing against. And people were making like, oh, he's a prospect because he's playing against a bunch of fucking JV players. Anybody's a fucking prospect of access, right? Like, if this would have been the NFL, you know where you'd be at right now? Not in the fucking league. I know that sounds crazy, but it's the truth. Wemby is literally right now, what you're saying about him, like, gaining weight and everything like that, he can't gain weight. He needs to. But it has to be 15 pounds of muscle. If he gains 30 pounds, you know who he is? Manute Bol. He's somebody who they said, okay, we're going to bulk in the moment. That's where all the fucking injuries are. Can you imagine putting right now 30 pounds on somebody who's fucking 7'5"?
7'4", yeah.
7'4". So imagine putting 30. That's essentially putting it's like putting an anvil on a fucking twig. It's like, okay, either it's going to hold up its own weight or it's going to break. 30 pounds, it looks good in NBA standards. The issue is, historically, when you look at the NBA, I have not seen anybody who is over the height of fucking 7'1" actually produce to what they think that he's going to produce. Not only in San Antonio, but on the Western Conference. All the centers that are that height and above, they thrive in the Eastern Conference. The West, and the fact that they're trying to make him be three different positions, he's supposed to be positionless, you got to be fucking crazy. He'll be a 7'5 guy going against. One night, he's going to be against Steph Curry. The next night, he's going to be going against fucking Bam. The night after that, he's going to be going against LeBron. What? If somebody can please make that shit make sense to me, like, I will condone it. I will actually allow it. But you cannot tell me, out of a 7-day week, he's going against three different positions, three different lineups, because we're in a now, quote-unquote, positionless league. I just don't see it in my eyes. So I guess the moral of my story is this. I really hope that they realize that he is a center. He is just that. He is a fucking center. Don't make him out to be more than what he is. Don't make him out to be the generational talent that Zion was supposed to be. Because you know what? Since LeBron, they've said that shit 6 times, and they have gone 0-6 ever since. So if we could just get there, if people can just take that for what it is, everybody that they said was supposed to be the next LeBron, the next generational talent, they have not lived up to the expectations since then. We don't even have to go far back. The last 3 drafts, I'm sitting, I'm like, okay, you said he's the guy. You said Zion's the guy. You said the guy before Zion was supposed to be the guy. I don't even remember if these dudes are in the fucking league anymore. Zion, honestly, is 2 years removed from playing in the fucking Big 3. It's really that bad. So, again, I'll just say, positionless league, when it comes to the NBA, when it comes to these players like, you know, Wimby and everything like that, play your position. Don't try to be more than what you are. Wimby, be a power forward, be a center. I respect the fact that he's going and, you know, working with David Robinson. He's working with Tim Duncan. However, he need to be working with his teammates, whoever the fuck they are. Because honestly, I don't even know who the fuck San Antonio has on their roster outside of him. When it comes to the draft, I don't know who they drafted because they were just so excited to get Wimby. But you're not selling tickets knowing for a fact that he's only going to play 35 games because you have to load manage him until, like you said, he gains that weight. If he doesn't gain that 15, 20 pounds of weight in the next 4 to 6 months, season's already over. That's the first year. He's done. He's essentially Zion in reverse. They want him to get big. They want Zion to get small. I land.
Okay. All right. We have a couple of voicemails that we're going to play. Let's get to the mail. Here we go.
What's going on? What's going on, fellas? This is the Renaissance. Yeah, I'm just chiming in. I'm sure you went through a great deal of information. My apologies for the absence. I did notice that you all were talking about Wimby, the number one pick for San Antonio. I would have to say that he really doesn't need to do anything other than what he's been doing. I don't believe he needs to gain weight. I don't believe he needs to bulk up. Just continue doing what he's doing. I believe he's into the yoga, whatever type of strength training. Just keep that up. I mean, they're from overseas. The NBA is moving in that direction. So he could be a stretch 5, if you will. But even if it's going to go into part 2.
Okay. All right. Next voicemail. Here we go.
You know, everything is going, the game is going more European anyway. So, you know, have them stretch 5, shoot mid-range jumpers, pull the big man out, defensive presence in the middle. And that's pretty much it. Look at Kevin Durant. You know, he didn't bulk up. He came in, he was skinny. I mean, he gained a little bit of weight. I mean, say that's due to age, but you know, he didn't bulk up with muscle or anything like that. He just kept doing what he was doing. I think the same thing applies to Wimby. Just keep doing what you're doing. You know, get your yoga mat, do your downward dog or whatever it is that you do. Start shooting up that rock 20 feet, stretch your range out, do it like that. Peace, Renaissance.
Okay. Lou, Gray, any thoughts of what Renaissance, hope I'm saying that right? What he said?
I think he's right. Yeah. You know, just and goes back to Gray's point too. He just keep doing what he's doing. But I do think he does have to get a little weight on him though. you know, especially being a center in the NBA, because, you know, it's a physical game, and he doesn't look to be that physical. So yeah, I think dude needs to beef up a little, like he said, get on a yoga mat or whatever, and just continue doing what he's doing.
I agree. Yes, the league is moving towards how the style of play in Europe, but I'm just thinking right now, like with the roster that San Antonio has, if you're playing him at the five, if you're playing him at the pivot, and I know, he's gonna have to put on a few pounds. To survive an entire season, you playing it. Greg Popovich will probably moving around, have him playing the four, sometime maybe having him playing the three or defending I look at him and I'm like, he's not going to survive a full season. Like, Durant is the way he is because, you know, he moves all around the court. Like, he's more defending on the wing, with the top of the wing, than he is on the low block. And now, you know, if Pop plays Wimby like Durant, he'll have a very successful career and look almost KD-like. But if they're gonna have him on the, you know, defending the block on the low, you know, on the low block at his size, he ain't gonna survive a whole thing.
Agreed. Now let me say, let me just like add to what you're saying. I'm not saying I'm changing my opinion or your opinion, but I just have to say this when it comes to KD comparisons. KD historically has had someone there to complement his play. Wimby has nothing, and he won't have anything until at the earliest 2025. I know that sounds crazy to think about. Unless they make a significant trade for assets that they do not have, San Antonio is fucked until 2025. So whatever they get in the offseason, whatever they end up doing right now, is indicative of what it's going to be. When I look at KD, I'm like, okay, from the moment he got into the league, he had a complimentary player, even if they were drafted the same year, a year before, a year after. Like, there was a complimentary player. San Antonio is not in a position to get a compliment to Wimby. And the reason why is they hedged their bets to the point where even when they drafted, they were drafting hoping that wherever they picked, somebody in the draft would want that person that year. Meaning like, okay, yeah, we drafted, you know, these random ass two people that honestly we don't need, because if we're going to be a positionless team, we could just pick them up and somebody's going to want them, like a Boston or Orlando, I want to say Seattle, but it's not Seattle, but like the Clippers or some shit like that, right? But the issue with San Antonio is this. Wimby has no compliment at all. And the expectation for him is higher than... The expectations for Wimby is higher than the conference that he's in. When I look at the conference he's in a loaded Western conference. When I say loaded, his own division is so fucking loaded that, like, they're already doomed to fail to begin the season. When we go and what is that, Q? Is that the middle of September when we start doing, like, the rankings for the NBA and shit like that? When we start to talk about, like, the AP rankings and shit like that?
Uh-huh.
San Antonio's not going to be in the top 20. They're not. We know this shit now in June. I know that sounds fucked up to say, but it's like nobody's looking at San Antonio to win because they already know they have a project and somebody that they know for a fact that has a okay, let me not be an asshole. He has a 3-year time frame, the same way Zion does. But he has a 3-year time frame, but he has a team that wants to win now. San Antonio is going to be a team that needs to win now. When I say win, meaning get into the playoffs. If San Antonio doesn't get in the playoffs in the first 2 years, we're going to be talking about, hey, did that pick make sense? Was it a good decision? Does it matter? Why Wimby and not this person? People are going to be talking about that. And the reason why I say that is because, just like Washington, and no disrespect to the Wizards, I'm looking at the fact that Cam is going to be the Ja Morant of this year. People are like, yo, why the fuck didn't we just completely just forgot? And it's like, oh, because you thought he was injury prone, but you picked a fucking 7'5 point guard that wants to be a fucking center because of his height. Like, he plays like a point, but he's a center position. So, and, you know, in my closing is this. Wimby, I really hope that he is everything everybody hopes for, but historically, we have been saying on this show, for as long as we've been doing the sports test, a lot of the expectations aren't being met. Not because the teams are picking wrong. It's because they're picking these players not knowing the rest of the fucking team. When Zion got picked for New Orleans, we were sitting there like, okay, who the fuck else is in New Orleans? You know who it was? Lonzo Ball. When's the last fucking time we said Lonzo Ball mattered in New Orleans? We thought that he was going to compliment Zion. That was, what, 2 years ago? 2-3 years ago? Nothing's happened since. So, imagine a team like San Antonio who has less than nothing. No draft picks that anybody wants. Now we're thinking, okay, they're going to do something. The answer is they're not going to do a fucking thing. So, Wimby, I really hope that they sell tickets this year. Because if they don't sell tickets, you know where they're going to be? Next year, trying to figure out if they're going to be the top 3 draft picks. Unless they make a significant trade. I don't know who they could trade for at this point. If I'm them, I know it's going to sound crazy. Hey, Boston, you have all these fucking second round picks. You have all these fucking picks you don't need. You do not need 17, 18 fucking second round picks in the next 4 years. You don't need it. You really don't need it. You know what? Give us a couple of second round picks. You can have somebody from San Antonio who don't fucking matter. But you know what? It's Boston. We'll just pick anybody who's light skinned that will go against Tatum, right? Like, they'll be a good compliment. Give us 2 second round picks, Jaylen Brown, and we'll pick somebody off your roster who matters. Like, you know what? Just give us that. We'll just take somebody from San Antonio, because why the fuck not? San Antonio needs a Jaylen Brown who's like, you know what? Even though I know I'm not the star of this team, I'm the star of the fucking team right now, because guess what? The person that you want to have as a star of your team, he's not going to make it 82 games. Wimby is not making it 82 games.
Get your ass Jaylen Brown and make sure that you know for a fact you've secured your lineup for the next 2 seasons. Because Wimby, I'm going to be really upset when people are sitting there like, Wimby, like, he wasn't the number one pick for a reason. It was a flop, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, you picked fucking Manute Bol as the number one pick for San Antonio. Hello? Like, they intentionally tanked for... They've been tanking for 4 years for this moment.
Well, see, Greg, this is where I, like...
Go ahead.
Like, when you're, like, comparing, like, all this, the one thing that comes to my mind is, all right, everybody knows that San Antonio is not going to be that good this year, and probably next year, too. Okay, I don't know what their draft picks are. I don't know what their assets are, you know, or whatever. But I'm comparing this to the same year that LeBron got drafted from the Cavs, because nobody, you know, they weren't going to make the playoffs first year, second year. I don't even know if they made it LeBron's second year. I think they might have. But that's what they're going for. They got to build around him now, around Wimby. So once they build around him, then the expectations become higher. And, you know, then people are going to say, well, all right, you know, they got this player. They got him. You know, they got 2 other good players around him. Now they could, you know, now let's shoot for the playoffs and then keep going from there.
Okay. Okay, we got one more voicemail. Let's play that. Here we go.
You got to remember, you know, when you talk about the next generation talent, the next LeBron, and, you know, all of that stuff. You know, LeBron, the first 3 years, you could argue that LeBron was Sean Kemp without passing ability. You know, of course, he's, you know, polished in those areas, but, you know, it took him at least three to four years to develop and then learn how to win. He didn't learn how to win until he got to Miami. So.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
Yeah, I have to agree. You know, LeBron didn't. I think LeBron made the playoffs his second year. The Cavs made the playoffs his second year in the league.
Okay. But then again, you know, nobody expected, you know, at first they just expected him to win, but he didn't have the players around him. And until, like, you know, our listener Renaissance said, until he got to Miami. He had D. Wade. He had Chris Bosh. They brought in Ray Allen, you know? So maybe they'll do the same thing with Wemby.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be the same. I mean, you gotta remember San Antonio is rebuilding. San Antonio, they have some okay pieces in San Antonio. Jeremy Sochan, shit. It's crazy. I can't even name the damn roster of the Spurs.
I don't know either.
But, you know, there are the place when they ran it, they need a point guard. They definitely need a point guard. But I don't think we can write the full story of Wemby yet. I think it's going to take at least 2 or 3 years. Probably, you know, this first 2 or 3 years, that's about as much time as Popovich has left from San Antonio. Because I think had they not got the number one pick, Pop probably would have retired after the season. So yeah, it's gonna take a minute for San Antonio to fully build around Wemby and get the pieces there that can support not just a playing appearance, but actually getting top six and being in the playoffs. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch. I am interested in seeing his development over these next couple of years. We know this year San Antonio is going to be bad. They probably be up there with the Wizards fighting for the rights of the number one pick next year. Yeah, we just got to look at reality. San Antonio's roster is not a playoff roster in any stretch of the imagination. It'd probably be them. You know, if we're looking at like draft prospects for next year, it will be the Wizards. It will be San Antonio. It may be Detroit if you know. Fighting for the right to pick number one next year. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to watch. I'm to say I'm excited is not doing justice. I want to see how he's going to adjust to being in the league. It's going to be interesting. I'm going to close out with that. It's going to be very, very interesting. It's going to be very, very interesting. So, with that being said, we have right now, this is the exciting time of the NBA offseason. We just had the draft. We had all these blockbuster trades that happened. And then on Friday, the main event, the opening of free agency. Now, there was one more trade that was made, and that was made today. The should have been coming 4 or 5 years ago, but they didn't want to trade him. But they didn't want to keep him. Talking about John Collins being traded from the Atlanta Hawks to the Utah Jazz. I don't I don't understand it. I understand the trade because of the new collective bargaining agreement, like the penalties for being over the cap and deep, you know, over the luxury tax line are very, very steep starting this off season. But you give John Collins away after you signed him to a $125 million contract. You give him away for Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay, who's like 36, 37 years old. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? This one I know you saw like brought Collins in because they had the cap space to do it. But Rudy Gay? How, make this make sense.
It doesn't. Rudy Gay and a bag of chips. That's what they got for him. So
I mean, I understand why Atlanta, because you know next year you got to pay DeJounte Murray a max contract. I get it, I understand it, but I don't understand like Rudy Gay and a bag of boiled peanuts. Really, Atlanta?
Well, look a little bit more into it then. Do you think that they got rid of him and then maybe? What's the center's name? For Atlanta,
Clint Capella and
Capella. Do you think he's gone next, baby? And I mean, rumor had it the past couple of months, like they might trade Trae Young too.
yeah, I heard that. I've been hearing those rumblings about Trae Young. Because this, I mean, as presently constructed, this Atlanta team is not a championship contender. And they're a tax-paying team for you to get the 7 or 8 seed out of the play-in, and then you get demolished by Miami. You get demolished by Miami. You get demolished by Philly or Boston. Like, this is not a championship caliber team. Trae Young plays not a lick of defense. Excellent shooter. Does play a lick of defense. You know, they thought they solved their defensive problem by bringing DeJounte Murray. Yeah, that didn't work out. I don't know. But you trade John Collins for Rudy Gay and cannon fodder. Oh boy, the NBA, where unexpected happens. So
you know it.
Yeah, so I guess as I said earlier, free agency begins. Well, teams can start talking to free agents 6 p.m. on Friday. We know that there are some headliners out there, especially one being a nutcase in Dallas, Kyrie Irving. So let's start right there. Does Kyrie stay in Dallas?
Man, I don't even know if Kyrie knows what he's doing. I can't even speak on it because I don't know. I haven't heard anything. I haven't read anything. I haven't seen anything. So, I mean, the latest I heard is, yeah, he re-signs with Dallas. So, take that what you will.
Yeah, pretty much, especially with Kyrie. Another notable free agent, Fred VanVleet. Does he stay in Toronto, which is the tea leaves are saying now he's gone? Where does he head up? Where do you think he lands?
Call me crazy. I think VanVleet ends up on the Lakers. Now they probably don't have the money for him, but I don't know. I'd call it a hunch. I think he ends up on the Lakers somehow.
Okay. Another notable free agent, James Harden. He hasn't announced that he's opting. He hasn't announced that he's opting out of his contract, but we know he is. We know he's going to. Does he stay in Philly? Or, as the rumor mill is trolling and saying, does he end up going back to Houston?
I think he stays in Philly.
Okay. Okay. I don't see no reason. He's about to turn 34 years old. Houston is nowhere near winning, nowhere near contention. Yes, they're looking to sign. You know, they're looking to sign veterans to accelerate their rebuild. But Houston is really no. He's not going back to Houston. His best chance to win a championship, his best chance is to stay right there where he is in Philly with Joel Embiid, the not MVP, who shouldn't have been MVP, should have been Jokic. But we're going to talk, that's another discussion for another day. I think he stays in Philly. The big talk of the playoffs was Austin Reaves. Now, you just said that Fred Van Vliet probably might end up in L.A. That means, and we know that that the Lakers have prioritized both Hachimura and Austin Reaves to re-sign. Like, and they can match any deal that is made to them because they're both restricted free agents.
Mm-hmm.
In order for the Lakers to get Van Vliet, they got to renounce everybody. They're going to renounce all their free agents. That's D'Angelo Russell. I think Jared Vanderbilt is a free agent. They got to renounce Hachimura. They got to renounce Austin Reed. I don't see the Lakers doing that. I really don't.
Because like they would I have said, to do it was just a hunch.
Okay. All right.
I'm sorry. I do know the Lakers said one of their top priorities was re-signing Austin Reaves. So, I don't know. I mean, make some trades, do something else, and, possibly get Van Vliet. But, like I said, just a hunch.
Yeah. I'm with you on that one. So it looks like we're gonna have plenty to talk about next week. With the NBA, given with free agency right around the corner, and see which. I don't think it's gonna be a lot of spending. I mean, because it's just like just about every team is trying to cut salary because of the new CBA. But it's gonna be interesting to see. Like where they and the ones that we mentioned, Van Vliet, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, where they end up, where Draymond Green ends up going, whether he stays with Golden State or signs a new team. It's going to be It's going to be a very interesting free agency period, especially like I said with the penalties for being over the luxury tax line. That is coming into effect with the new CBA starting this offseason. So it's going to be interesting. So we have a few voicemails. We're going to play those. And then we can quickly talk some baseball. Put a nice bow on this show and get us on out of here. So let's play these voicemails now. Here we go.
You're right. Popovich has maybe 2-3 years. I mean, he's getting up there. But Wimby's going to be his final chapter, his final experiment. I mean, he did the same thing with David Robinson, Tim Duncan, and then Wimby. That's his final chapter. And then he's going to leave right when they're on the cusp of going to the next level. And then Popovich, that's how he's going to live on. They're going to keep bringing up his name, and Popovich laid the blueprint. And so as he was he's working on his Cinderella final chapter as his strategy. But yeah, they'll be all right. Build through the draft, and they'll do it like that. A couple of trades, and they'll be right there. And then Pop's going to leave.
All right, next voicemail.
I don't think they're going to pull that trade with Trae Young. He's a money maker. He's a seat filler. He's good with the local celebrities. They need him right now. But they also need to win. So just put some complimentary pieces around them. Some defensive players, some rebounders, a couple of shooters out there on the wing, just like they did a couple of years ago, and they'll be fine. But they'll trade Zion to New York before that happens, which I still think Zion's going to New York because he doesn't want to be in New Orleans. All the stuff that's going on with him is just distractions. I know he has that weight problem, but he'll get that weight down. You ship him to New York, he'll get in shape. That's what New York needs right now. Get rid of Randle and revive.
Okay. And last voicemail. Here we go.
Hypothetically, if they do get rid of Trae Young, I could see them doing a swap James Harden for Trae Young. James Harden's not trying to win the championship. He just want to pad stats. He'd go to Atlanta and do that all day long and eat barbecue chicken and gain weight, do whatever it is that he wanted to do right there in Atlanta.
That's okay. The truth right there.
That is definitely the truth. All right. It looks like we lost Greg. And that's okay. So thoughts on the baseball on the baseball season so far, Lou?
Yeah, it's been all right. It's been pretty good. I guess the story of the past month or so has been these Ellie De La Cruz and the Cincinnati Reds went on a 12-game winning streak, took over first place in the National League East or Central.
Well, Central.
he's fun to watch. That dude is really, really fun to watch, man. Other than that, like, you know, you got this, the usual suspects, you know, Ohtani leading the league in home runs, dominating as a pitcher. So, but you know, he's just the team around him. They're only a game back of the wild card right now, so All-Star break's coming up in about 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Then the trade deadline, I believe, is end of July or very
soon. Right, it's August. August 2nd.
Okay. So, we'll find out in the next month who the buyers and sellers are going to be and who are the contenders and the pretenders.
Absolutely. Yeah, Ellie De La Cruz is definitely fun to watch. He is box office material right there.
Mm-hmm.
Since he's come up, like the Reds has just been, they've been red hot. They got cooled off over the weekend. Atlanta went in there, but we even said those were. Even though Atlanta won 2 out of 3, well, I think it either swept them, I can't really remember. They weren't blowouts. They were
no, yeah, right.
You know, the Reds were down in the bottom of the ninth, and they lost only by one run. And mm-hmm. I know Saturday that like two home runs were hit in the bottom of the ninth, and just couldn't get over the top. The same thing happened yesterday. They were down, I think. They were down by 4 runs in the bottom of the ninth, and they scored 3. Just couldn't get that last one over. Cincinnati has impressed me. We, you know, at the beginning of the year, we had mega jokes on Cincinnati Like, this could be the worst team ever. Yeah, that now belongs to Oakland. That garbage. Mm-hmm. Garbage dump. But, yeah, Cincinnati has really, really impressed me. And like I said, Ellie De La Cruz has been sensational to start.
Yep, like and I said, fun to watch. Very, very fun to watch. He just hit for the cycle 2 days ago, I think. Not sure. Fact check me on this if you want, but the youngest and quickest in baseball history to get a cycle.
Wow.
Not too sure about that, but I'm almost positive.
Wow. Yeah, he is definitely the, if you have MLB extra innings or MLB TV, whatever they're, you know, watch him. He is very, very fun to watch. He's very, very fun to watch. All right. Yes, we have the All-Star break coming up, so we just have the starters announced either this week or next week. So, yeah, July is definitely going to be the month that we see who the pretenders and contenders are, who's going to be buying and selling at the deadline. Yeah, the fun part of the MLB season is nearest.
Coming up.
So, with that being said, we're going to skip awards for this week because I don't really have none, unless you have some, Lou.
I had one, but I could save it for next week.
No, go ahead. That's go ahead and say it.
All right. Okay. Well, I got the it's again, not to use the term again, but a usual suspect that's, we've given out plenty of awards to him so far this year, but the Bill O'Brien, you done fucked up award is going to Antonio Brown, the former NFL wide receiver.
What the hell has he done now?
Well, he had a 94% owner's stake in the Arena League, the Arena Football League team, the Albany Empire. Forgive my dog in the back, please. But they terminated the membership and kicked the Albany Empire out of the league over a failure to pay a mandatory assessments that were like way overdue. And now coaches, players and everything are filing a lawsuit against Antonio Brown now. So this guy just can't stay out of trouble.
What
he just can't. I was gonna save it for next week, but yeah, he'll probably have something new pop up next week, so we'll see.
We'll see. Like I said, I have no awards this week except my usual Dan Snyder get the fuck out of town award goes to Dan Snyder. He just wants you to get the fuck out of the league. Three more weeks. All right. Well, this was another fun episode of the Best Damn Sports Show on Stereo, the Young Black and Bothered Sports Desk. We will be on next week, the day before the 4th of July. So we will see you then. If we don't see you then, I hope that you have a very safe and fun holiday. Safe, fun, and enjoyable holiday, however you may choose to celebrate it. Please be careful out here on these streets because life is lifing and it's real out here. So until next week, everybody, we'll see you then. Peace out.
Peace out, y'all.
Hey, do you have the Wi-Fi password? Common words everyone has said in an airport, coffee shop, or any public place with free internet. Don't fall victim to internet hackers while using free internet thanks to NordVPN. NordVPN is one of those services you tell yourself you don't need until it's too late. We've used the NordVPN to browse the web, check bank accounts, and even stream apps like Netflix. It's the only VPN service that lets you bypass ISPs, perfect for when your job has sites you frequent like Facebook is blocked. It's the best VPN service you can get for both price and performance. Install NordVPN on up to 6 devices, including your smartphone, tablet, and desktop, and experience the service for yourself. Start protecting yourself and your content with NordVPN by heading over to nordvpn.com/YBAB at checkout and save 75% on your subscription.